Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's One Planet series. Since taking office, the Trump administration and EPA head Scott Pruitt have been working to roll back Obama-era environmental policies, including the 2016 updated Toxic Substances Control Act of 1976. That gave the EPA power to review thousands of chemicals for safety. According to the Environmental Working Group, the updated law gave the EPA the power to regulate thousands of chemicals used in everyday items. We're talking about paint, cleaning products, mattresses, clothing, insulation, and so much more. But under Scott Pruitt's leadership, the EPA has taken every opportunity to undermine chemical safety regulations. It's delayed a ban on toxic paint stripping chemicals that have caused 4 deaths in 1 year. It has also stacked leadership positions with industry-friendly nominees and appointees, and it has approved new chemicals. On today's One Planet series, we are spending the hour talking about changes to the Toxic Substances Control Act and its impacts on public health and the environment. Today, we're joined by Melanie Banesh, legislative attorney at the Environmental Working Group. Melanie provides legislative and regulatory analysis of federal food, farm, and chemical laws. And Melanie Banesh joins us from her office in Washington, D.C. Hi, Melanie. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you. We are also joined by award-winning environmental reporter Sharon Lerner. Sharon covers health and the environment for The Intercept. She's also a reporting fellow at the Investigative Fund. Sharon's series, The Teflon Toxin, was a finalist for a National Magazine Award. And Sharon Lerner joins us on the phone from New York. Hi, Sharon. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. Hi.
Great. It's great to have you. Well, Melanie, let's start off with you. You know, it's so hard to keep up with what the EPA is doing, just the EPA and all of the rollbacks. And we'll talk bigger picture later in the show. But first, let's focus on chemicals. Remind us, what is the Toxic Substances Control Act, which was first passed in 1976?
Sure. The Toxic Substances Control Act is really the primary law that we have in our country for regulating chemicals in commerce. So chemicals, as you mentioned, that are used industrially, but also that make their way into everyday products that you use every day, your mattress, the paint on your walls, the chemicals and the cleaning products that you use, and this was first passed in 1976, and then through a series of court decisions ended up not being a very powerful law and sort of lay dormant for a number of years. And Congress in 2016, recognizing some of the problems with this law, recognizing that the chemicals we use are fairly unregulated in this country, took steps to modernize and update that 1976 law. And so through what was called the Frank Lautenberg Chemical Safety Act, we now have, I guess you could call it TSCA 2.0. We have a brand new chemical safety law that is only 2 years old, and EPA, our new EPA under the leadership of Scott Pruitt, is now responsible for implementing that law and coming up with some of the new rules that are really going to govern how that new law works.
And Sharon, you have done extensive reporting on chemicals. Remind us, how does the U.S. government test chemicals? What is the process before these chemicals actually make it to the market?
Well, it's much more minimal than you would expect. And in many cases, there is no testing at all. And I think, you know, in instances where there is some testing, for instance, with pesticides, which are regulated under a different law, the testing is, the data, the safety information is provided by the companies themselves, which raises huge problems because, as you would effect, much of that data tends to skew to show chemicals to be more safer than they are. But in a lot of cases, what we're seeing is that companies actually do have information about their chemicals. They study them internally, which they don't necessarily share with the EPA, or if they do, it's often later, after many years, and that was certainly the case in a couple of big prominent lawsuits involving chemicals, where you see that the companies, and in one case I'm talking about DuPont that I wrote a long series about, which made chemicals that have come into the news lately called PFAS, but often they're not bound to share their information when they have it, or they are bound by law, but they don't do it. And if they end up doing it, it's, you know, you get a slap on the hand, you get a fine, but it doesn't, can't go back and sort of, you know, alter the course of how, of history, because the public is basically operating without all the information that industry has, even as chemicals are, you know, we're exposed to them daily, have them in our bodies. So, all of which is to say there really isn't much testing at all.
Sharon, we had you on the show to talk about your explosive investigation about DuPont and the chemical PFOA. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
There's two terms for it, PFOA. Yeah. So just can you give us an overview of what scientists have learned about PFOA and what we know that DuPont knew?
Yeah, well, to take a step back, PFOA is one of a very big class of chemicals that contains thousands and that are called PFAS. PFAS is the acronym people are using now. PFOA became kind of came into public awareness because of a lawsuit that happened in the early 2000s against DuPont on behalf of folks living in West Virginia and Ohio. And that was because there is a DuPont plant in West Virginia where PFOA was made and used, and it seeped into the water and caused people all sorts of health harms. What's happened in recent years is, one, we've realized that PFOA is one of thousands of chemicals in this class, but two, we've gone from thinking of this as though this is an occupational health issue, you know, where the people who are working in these factories were exposed, or maybe the people living right around the factories were exposed, to realizing that actually these chemicals are in the water really across much of the country, affecting maybe a quarter of water suppliers. And the way that this has been sort of cropping up into the news lately is that we've been, well, the EPA has set levels for PFOA and one other of these chemicals in the class, PFOS. In 2016, recently, you might have seen headlines about this. There was this suppressed study, this big news about, like, well, the ATSDR, which is another federal agency, has calculated safety levels that are much lower than the ones that the EPA set. And I think what I've, you know, realized from looking at these chemicals closely is that scientists who study them have kind of long had the evidence that these lower numbers were more accurate. And given that, you know, these lower numbers are more accurate, again, it's not something that, like, just a few people who are, you know, work closely with them are exposed to, but actually these are chemicals that are in the blood of the vast majority of Americans and the vast majority of people around the world. So it's kind of this hard to fathom level of exposure. And we're realizing, you know, it's not just PFOA and it's not just PFOA and PFOS, but many chemicals. And we're realizing too that because very, very low levels are potentially unsafe, that it's really a health issue that at least theoretically applies to kind of the general public at this point.
And to remind everyone of what happened in 2016, Melanie, we did a show about the law that was passed to update the Toxic Substances Control Act. And it was framed as this bipartisan victory because the House and the Senate voted for this law. And then Senator Barbara Boxer, before she stepped down, who has really been an advocate for chemical testing, said she wasn't really happy with the final law. She thought that it was watered down too much. And according to reports, the chemical industry was also involved in the writing of this law. So what are your thoughts on what came out of that 2016 law that was ultimately signed by Barack Obama?
Well, I think the 2016 law, it was certainly an improvement over the 1976 law, but the 1976 law wasn't really doing anything. So that's a pretty low bar. Mm-hmm. It was passed with bipartisan support. It did make several important changes, but often there were a few important details that Congress didn't address. One, they created a new what's called a safety standard, and so this means when EPA is looking at chemicals and deciding whether they're safe or not, this is sort of the measure that they're using to determine if this is safe, if it's safe at a certain level, if there are restrictions that need to be taken to make sure that it's safe. And they used sort of a new formulation of what's called unreasonable risk. It's similar language to what was in the 1976 law, but they made some adjustments to it. And whenever you are introducing a new legal concept, you never know exactly what's going to happen. And then the other thing, which is common when Congress is passing a law, is they left open some big questions. And they said, you, EPA, the agency responsible for implementing this law, need to write rules that are going to govern these aspects of the law. And so two of the big questions that the EPA is responsible for is figuring out how they're going to choose which chemicals they're going to look at and figuring out what kind of criteria they're going to use to determine if they're safe. So the scientists at EPA are required to conduct risk assessments, and EPA has to figure out how their scientists are going to do that. And those are sort of foundational parts of the new law that were left that had to be answered right as we had a change in the administration. And so what we've seen happen is the previous administration had about 6 months to work on this. They very quickly wrote some rules that my organization and other organizations in the public health community thought would be fairly health protective in the way that they were going to implement the law and answer some of those big questions. And then we had a change in the administration. We had new people come in, and about 6 months later, we saw a complete rewrite of those rules in a way that we don't think is in line with what the intent of the law was, that's not in line with what Congress wanted, and that are going to really limit the kinds of safety assessments that the agency is doing in a way that may allow them to reach conclusions that we would not agree with.
The chemical industry was involved in writing the initial law that passed in 2016, and according to reports, that same chemical industry lobbied very hard when Scott Pruitt was head of EPA, was nominated to head the EPA. And we know that so many industry people are now running various organizations. Lots of reports about Scott Pruitt meeting regularly with industry. Can you talk about that piece of it, Melanie? What sort of influence did the chemical lobby have on this decision?
On the changes in the rules?
Yes.
Well, the primary person responsible for writing those rules, or at least overseeing the rewrite of those rules, was a person named Nancy Beck. She came directly to the agency from the American Chemistry Council, which is the primary trade association for the chemical industry. And so a lot of her ideas are reflected in these changes. And actually, we did an analysis about a year ago looking at some of the comments that the chemical industry filed in response to the first iteration of the rule under the Obama administration, and some of the changes that were made when those rules were finalized in July of last year. And they line up pretty well with the things that industry was asking for.
And she, Nancy Beck, who previously worked as an executive at the American Chemistry Council, pushed the EPA during the Obama administration to narrow the scope of the risk evaluations. What does that mean exactly?
So what it means is when you are doing a risk evaluation, or under the way that TSCA is written, it says when you are figuring out if a chemical is safe, you have to look at every way that that chemical is used, and you have to look at all the different people who might be exposed, and you have to give special consideration to people who might be particularly vulnerable, like children or workers, or the elderly or pregnant women. And you have to take all of that information into consideration when you're coming up with ways that you may potentially have to restrict this chemical. And what happened is the EPA has said, we don't actually have to take all of those different exposures into consideration, and we don't have to take into consideration all the different ways that this chemical is used. And we're just going to pick and choose what uses we're going to look at, and we're going to sort of pick and choose who we think is exposed under those particular issues. And so you don't have a full picture of the potential safety risks from this chemical.
And also,
and so that's what they were asking for when they were saying we want to narrow these chemical risk evaluations.
And also working on risk evaluations is Eric Baptist, a former senior lawyer at the American Petroleum Institute, another massive player in the chemical industry. On today's Your Call, it's our One Planet series, and we are talking about chemicals under the Obama administration. The House and the Senate worked with the chemical industry to update the Toxic Substances Control Act of 1976. Then Senator Barbara Boxer said it didn't go far enough, but if this is all we can get, she decided to sign on to it. Well, in comes the Trump administration and Scott Pruitt leading the EPA, and they have completely watered down those regulations. Today, we're joined by Melanie Benesch, legislative attorney at the Environmental Working Group, and Sharon Lerner. She covers health and the environment and has written extensively about chemicals for The Intercept. And if you have any questions or comments, any questions about chemicals, we're talking about things that we all use on a daily basis. So many chemicals we use, and a lot of them have never been tested. If you go to the EWG website, you can type in some of the chemicals in your shampoo, in your lotion, in your toothpaste. You've probably used at least 10 already this morning. A lot of these things have never been tested. Sharon, let's talk about some of the chemicals that the EPA wanted to test under Obama. The EPA said that it began reviewing 40,000 chemicals with a focus on 10 that are already on the market. We are talking about things like, let's see if I can pronounce this, trichlorothiazine, which is used in adhesives and spot removers, tetrachlorothiazine, which is used in dry cleaning, methylene chloride, which is found in paint strippers. I mean, these are chemicals that people use on a regular basis.
Yeah, absolutely. And methylene chloride, there's been a real push to get that off the market. It's quite deadly. And you've seen people who have lost people to it coming forward and sort of pleading, you know, in an emotional way for them to take action. But I kind of wanted to take a step back and look at the, you know, bigger picture. You mentioned before, Pruitt meets a lot with industry, and that kind of gets elided, or you know, we summarize that a lot. It's like, he has strong ties to industry. And I just wanted to take a moment and kind of look at the extent to which this is a departure. And of course, you see, you know, but as administrations change, the EPA changes, and you see that, you know, certainly there are are in the past, you know, with the Bush administration, there are there's more reliance on industry and that happened in the past, you know, that kind of having letting industry have a bigger voice, lobbyists have a bigger voice. But I think that we're really talking about a whole new level of industry input, and also of kind of denying the health and environmental mission, really, of the agency. You know, I have recently been looking at some of the Pruitt's travel records, because, like many reporters, that's sort of what we've been on this beat, end up having to kind of look at these many ethical issues that are cropping up. And as I do, you know, I see him, you know, in his schedule and in the documents that he's meeting with the Louisiana, speaking at the Louisiana Chemical Association Alliance meeting, at the American Chemistry Council Board of Directors meeting, that basically all, you know, there are dozens and dozens, really, of meetings with the industry. And you saw, like, Eric Lipton today on Twitter put out all these great handwritten letters that show, you know, his close relationship with all these oil and gas executives, and it's really across the board. I did a story recently about Samantha Dravis, who she resigned, but until a couple months ago was his policy director and an attorney at EPA. And when I was tallying up her meetings, I found that she had 99, that I found in this particular batch of emails, 99 meetings with industry, many of them with the chemical industry, while the email showed one meeting with environmental groups during that same time. Hmm. And actually, that meeting was canceled. But but just to give you a sense of how thoroughly the agency is focused on really implementing the desires of the industries it is meant to be regulating, and very, very clearly at the expense of public health. And really, I guess I feel, you know, as, like I said, so many reporters, I've been having to kind of look at these ethical scandals that have popped up recently, but overarchingly, and I feel this frustration as I kind of get pulled in this direction, you know, to see so much interaction with the industry. And it's not just, you know, palling around, but you know, very clearly, here are our wish lists. We need this lifted. We need this weekend. We need this tweet. We need, you know, we need the scientific advisory boards rejiggered. And, you know, there are so many changes happening in direct response to these requests. It is impossible to keep up. And, you know, as someone who, that's my job, to keep up, and I find it impossible. I mean, there is just, you can follow some threads, but there are so many, because so quickly they are giving away what they're supposed to be protecting.
Right. And we saw what happened under the Bush administration. Industry got so much of what they want. And is it fair to say, Sharon, that under this administration, industry is pretty much getting everything it wants?
Well, I think that if, you know, they haven't gotten everything they've asked for yet, but it might just be a matter of the time that it takes. You know, some
right.
of these things you can't overturn immediately. But, you know, when I was looking, for instance, at the Dravis documents, you know, when you look at the dates, okay, there was a ruling that affected Big Ag, you know, very soon after, weeks later, they meet with Samantha Dravis and say, hey, you know, we have this reporting requirement for CAFO, for animal waste, and, you know, it's really burdensome. And then a month later, you see, hey, the EPA introduces a way around this burdensome regulation. Mm. And, you know, and you see, you know, when you follow this correspondence, what you don't see is the people in the affected areas getting meetings with the EPA, with anyone high up at the EPA, and saying, hey, this is how this affects me. And so it's very, very one-sided. And, you know, it, again, in the past, of course, industry has had varying roles in, you know, and definitely under Bush did get a lot of what they wanted. But I think that we're talking about an even greater role this time.
Sharon Lerner covers the environment and health for The Intercept. She has done a number of investigative pieces on chemicals, the Teflon toxin. Her series was a finalist for a National Magazine Award. Melanie Benesch is legislative attorney at the Environmental Working Group, where she provides legislative and regulatory analysis of federal food, farm, and chemical laws. And on today's Your Call, it is our One Planet series, and we are talking about the changes that we're seeing under the Trump administration when it comes to regulating and banning chemicals. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be joined by filmmaker Mimi Chakarova. Her new series, Still I Rise, celebrates people who persevere in spite of their struggles. This is an amazing series, and we hope you can join us for that. And then on Wednesday, we'll rebroadcast our conversation with whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg. He joined us to discuss his new book, The Doomsday Machine, Confessions of a Nuclear War Planner. Thursday, we will talk about the state of unions with longtime organizer Jane McAlevey. Today it is our One Planet series, and we're talking about how the regulation and banning of chemicals has changed under the Trump administration and Scott Pruitt leading the EPA. We're joined by Sharon Lerner. She covers health and the environment for The Intercept, and Melanie Benesch is legislative attorney at the Environmental Working Group. And if you have any questions or comments about chemicals and just really the changes that we're seeing at the EPA, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. Melanie, Sharon referenced Eric Lipton's tweets, and Eric covers these issues for the New York Times. And I was just checking these out during the break. He's got a whole thread about Scott Pruitt and who he sends messages to, snail mail. He says, guess who he writes to? Oil and gas executives. Come along for the ride as we check out a bit of his correspondence. BP America came up first. A note to Chevron CEO with a bit of a personal touch from Pruitt. Wonderful to spend time together, exclamation point. Pruitt and Jack Girard, head of the American Petroleum Institute, the largest U.S. trade association for the oil and natural gas industry, had a nice back and forth. Pruitt ended it, very much enjoyed our time together. Harold Hamm, an Oklahoma oil billionaire who was the chair of Pruitt's reelection campaign, we appreciate you, exclamation point. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Melanie, what else can you tell us about the differences between the access that oil, gas, chemicals, that industry really has under this administration?
As I think Sharon really talked about, it's different from anything I think that we've ever seen before. You're seeing him taking a lot of meetings with industry. I think the environmental groups are having trouble getting our foot in the door. A good example is just a few months ago, Administrator Pruitt held a summit on perfluorinated chemicals, the chemicals that Sharon has done so much great reporting on. And when the summit was first announced, it was really largely industry groups and state officials who had been invited to the summit on a chemical that is affecting drinking water systems throughout the country, and that many environmental groups are deeply involved in. And it was really only after significant backlash that you saw environmentalists finally get some representation at that meeting. So that's just one example of many where you've seen environmentalists not get the same kind of access, not be able to get meetings, and not really have the same kind of input that industry stakeholders seem to have.
Sharon, did you want to jump in?
I did, because there are just so many levels of absurdity. I mean, so we both keep talking about, you know, that there's this imbalance in meetings, but I think, you know, to take another step back, it's like, I think we all know that it's, you know, even if an environmental group gets you know, to have a meeting, and they have had a few, they're not getting the same kind of consideration, because I think we've seen, we know who Scott Pruitt is. We know where he came from. He came from, obviously, Oklahoma, where his attorney general, but where he did the bidding of industry in many ways is very deep ties, financial and political, to the oil and gas industry there, which is very powerful there. And he has yet to show any interest in science, and in fact has, I think, more or less without exception, taken the side of industry over science. And it has been a real collision between the two. I think that's what we're seeing. And time and again, you know, he has been on a single side. And it's obviously... you know, you just have to think of the mission of the EPA to protect health and the environment. And that has never been where he was coming from. He sued the EPA before he came to lead it 14 times, as we know. And it was virtually always, it was always to defend the, you know, companies, you know, protect their ability to profit when it comes, when it basically was in conflict with the need to protect health and the environment. So, you know, with the summit, you know, what we saw was, and I should say, I've covered these chemicals extensively. I asked the EPA if I could attend. They told me it was closed to reporters. And then I ended up writing about many groups who wanted to go but weren't invited. At the last minute, they kind of changed their mind and invited one or two groups, which, you know, and then as it, you know, kind of popped up in the headlines, some reporters made their way in because some were invited, even though some weren't invited, and then some were pushed out. And it's just been a big, terrible mess. So what you had there was someone from the American Chemistry Council who gave one of the headline talks, who was representative of the Floral Council, which is the industry group representing the manufacturers of these chemicals we've been discussing. And then, at least at first blush, they did not include any of the affected communities. Later, they included one or two, and one or two representatives of environmental groups. They also didn't even include, at first, but then again, the last minute changed their mind, anyone from the ATSDR, which is a federal agency that basically came up with its own study that was recently released that showed that these lower levels of these chemicals basically lowered the safety threshold, came up with a much more stringent safety standard than EPA had.
You know,
I believe the Floral Council speech was the only one that was live streamed that was made available to the public who weren't able to attend.
Right. You know, we decided to do these One Planet series to really focus on these issues because we knew that so much of the media attention would be on Trump's tweets, and that's exactly what's really happening. And Melanie, you know, these people like Nancy Beck get these very important jobs, and most of us have never heard of her. And you wrote a piece for the Environmental Working Group called "The Scariest Trump Appointee You've Never Heard Of." What else did you learn about Nancy Beck? I mean, in addition to helping craft the chemical industry's political agenda, you write that a House committee once called her out for very disturbing attempts to undermine science. She's been a vocal critic of chemical safety findings, despite her own fundamentally flawed approach to chemical safety. What else should we know about Nancy Beck?
Yeah, so Nancy Beck has a long history of working with the chemical industry, of pushing back against chemical regulations. Before she went to work for the American Chemistry Council, she was working in the Bush administration in the Office of Management and Budget, which is sort of the last stop where regulations go before they become law. And it's often where the administration can have a hand in reshaping those regulations before sending them back to the agency. And so she was one of the only scientists that was sort of doctoring EPA regulations during that period. And
really became a roadblock and earned a reputation to a lot of environmental and chemical regulations that the agency was considering at that time, which is why the House committee actually mentioned her by name and expressed some concerns about what was happening over within that agency and the work that she was doing there.
Well, let's hear from a few callers. Let's go to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Welcome to the show.
Hello. I guess I want to bring this a little bit closer to home, maybe to California. California passed Prop 65 many, many years ago. Unfortunately, I had to find out the hard way about this in terms of getting exposed to some toxic chemicals. And California has not really moved, I don't think, significantly ahead on trying to deal with this whole issue of toxic chemicals, which many people are exposed to. I mean, in lower-income communities in the state, especially people of color, mm-hmm. Asthma rates are just astronomical. I just don't think the public generally is aware of just how many chemicals they're being exposed to and the health impacts of this. And I'm sorry to say that California has not really gotten in the lead so far to go beyond, say, Prop 65, and instead of just notifying people with some small notice in a grocery store that they should be banning chemicals. So I just don't know how are you going to get politicians to try and change this situation? What can the public do? I'm really depressed about this because the efforts that I've made as a disabled person who was disabled partly as a result of exposure to toxic chemicals, it's really difficult. I can't get local officials, my elected local officials, to even consider this issue. So I'm curious what you see, not only in Washington, but in California, about trying to move this ahead.
Well, thank you, Greg. Melanie, do you want to take that first?
Sure. So I will say I'm very sorry to hear about your personal situation, and I think, you know, your story really highlights the problem. There are many, many chemicals in commerce. Most of them are very unregulated. And in the 40 years that we had a completely ineffective national chemicals law, it really did fall on the states to create some of the limited regulations that we do have, many of which have taken the form of informing or trying to warn consumers, have also had trouble finding ways to actually restrict the way that chemicals are used. And so I think when Congress took up the Toxic Substances Control Act in 2016, you are exactly the kind of person that they were hoping to protect, people who are living in communities that have higher exposure to chemicals, people who work with chemicals and are uniquely at risk. And this new law is requiring EPA for the first time ever to systematically go through the chemicals that are out there and try and set regulations. And unfortunately, what we're seeing is the goals of that law and the intention of that law just being completely undermined by the way that it's being implemented and the people who are sort of at the helm right now. And so I mentioned earlier that their goal is to narrow the scope of the risk evaluations they're doing on chemicals. That's going to affect people who have been exposed to toxic chemicals, people who are living in communities where they have higher chemical exposures, because those individual risks and those community risks may not be taken into consideration to the same effect. So in terms of what you can do, certainly you can tell your elected representatives that they passed this law, and that Scott Pruitt's EPA is really undermining the intent of the law, and really undercutting its effectiveness, and that you want them to hold EPA accountable. You can write to EPA, and comment on some of their open rules and say, you know, that Americans need to be protected from toxic chemicals. And then we have a number of resources on our websites, chemicals and cleaners, chemicals in Your drinking water, if you're not using a water filter, you should be using a water filter, chemicals in your cosmetics, and ways that consumers can make some safer choices in the products that they're using. Consumers really shouldn't be the ones who are responsible for ensuring their own safety.
Well, this
from
is
toxic chemicals.
Yeah, we've done so many shows on chemicals, Melanie, and our guests say that you have to basically have a little, you know, you have to be a little scientist in your house and looking at the EWG. I was looking for some new shampoo and I typed in a few of the ingredients and noticed that some of the ingredients just have never been tested. So what would you say to people? I mean, a lot of our guests have said, you know, if you have more than 10 ingredients, you know, try to find a product with the least amount of ingredients. And then you definitely can go to the EWG.org website, type in the product. And if it's not in there, you can type in the specific chemical.
Yeah, I think that is good advice. I should specify that your personal care products, so your shampoos and body washes and makeup, they're actually regulated under a different law. Which is also, there's even less on the books when it comes to our cosmetics and personal care products than these other toxic chemicals, regulated under TSCA. And I'd love to talk to you, about that on another occasion. But people can certainly come to our website, use our resources. We often advise people to just avoid stuff with fragrances. Fragrances tend to have trade secret protection, and so they may be made up of a whole bunch of different chemicals, and we don't know what they are.
So we're talking about personal care, but so much of what we buy now is so mass-produced, like a new desk or a mattress,
right.
Clothing. The fabric might come from one country, and then it's made in another country. So how do you go about doing research on those types of items?
We also have some resources, furniture, we have a whole healthy home guide, that really goes in depth on, what kind of mattresses you should buy, what kind of paints you should buy, what kind of cleaning products you should buy. So we do have a lot of information, within that resource, but, I sympathize with consumers, and as a consumer myself, this is something that I struggle with every day. It's a big, complex market. There are a lot of pretty unregulated chemicals out there, and it is difficult to know what's best, which is why it's really important that we push the EPA to do its job and to do what Congress instructed them to do.
Sharon, what would you add?
I would say first that I have been hearing this. I mean, in the years that I've been reporting on chemicals, I've always tried to focus on people because that's why we care, right? And every place I go, every person I talk to, almost two of one, expresses some form of, you know, surprise or disillusionment that you know, that we're not safe in the way that he or she thought we were, you know. And I think there's this very widespread misconception that, oh, if it is available, if it is on the market, then we know it is safe. And obviously, as we're discussing, that's just not the case. But I would say, first off, like, calling into this show is like the perfect thing to do, because just amplifying your voice in any way you can, because I do think, you know, you're doing that. I applaud you, and I think that lots of people are doing this. One of the a story I wrote a couple months ago was looking at a number of candidates in the midterm elections who are focusing on contamination as like a central issue, making it a central issue in their campaigns for Congress. And I do think that it is becoming increasingly prominent, this issue, unfortunately, because it has to be, because more and more individuals are dealing with the consequences of some form of exposure to chemicals. So, you know, I was writing about Mindy Messmer, who is in New Hampshire and dealing with, first came kind of onto the issue of chemicals because there's a cluster of pediatric cancers in her area. But so many people are realizing one way or another that they have some contaminant in their water. And yes, often they figure it out, sometimes through local news and sometimes through the EWG website, which is wonderful. That's, you know, an incredible resource. But I do think that this is affecting more and more people, and it is becoming, as it should, a political issue, because people are incensed and realize that the only way to get something done is, one, to start by calling attention to it, and two, by demanding it. I mean, the upside of this very, very dark, awful problem is that, you know, because it's widespread, it is the kind of thing that will make an instant convert out of almost anyone. You know, once they appreciate, oh, this is impacting myself or my child or something like that, it really doesn't matter your party affiliation. In most cases, you want it gone. And I think we saw that the political turnaround recently also in North Carolina, where you had two Republican senators who refused to get behind the Trump nominee for an EPA position because he was very clearly underestimating the risk of chemicals, and was doing that because he had spent years as a recipient of money from the chemical industry. And there in North Carolina, where they've seen a number of contaminants in their water, and they were having widespread outrage from their constituents, they said, we can't get behind him. And I think that we will see more of that as people speak up, as you are now.
We have an email from Rob who says, how do chemical regulations in the United States compare to regulations in the EU, for example? Sharon?
Well, that's a big question, and I think... and Melanie, I want you to help me with this because, I mean, I think it depends certainly on the chemical. To some degree, what we're seeing here is that, you know, you get on the market. If there are some grave problems, maybe we reconsider. And I think there is there are more requirements to prove safety before approval in Europe, though it is changing in difference from chemical to chemical. Melanie, do you want to jump in?
Sure. First of all, I would just echo something that you said earlier about this becoming more of a political issue. And, you know, we really think that clean air and clean water and trying to prevent cancer are all bipartisan issues. And you see people from across the political spectrum really getting fired up about these issues. And in terms of the differences between our system and the European system, Europe has had more regulations than us for some time. And before a chemical can come onto the market in Europe, it really needs to be pretty data rich. I think that's the most significant difference, is you really have to have a lot of science already conducted on your chemical before you can bring it onto the market. I think it's no data, no market is sort of the shorthand. And here, with the changes in the law, EPA for the first time does have to say whether they think a chemical is safe or not before it can come onto the market. That was not the case before. It was really more of just a notification system. Unfortunately, and we were hoping that change in the law would bring about a lot more data, would bring about a lot more rigorous reviews from the EPA before a chemical can go onto the market. And we saw that sort of in the early days of the law, and then about a year ago, the EPA sort of reversed course, approved 600 new chemicals overnight, and other groups that have looked at some of the documents and have requested some of the documents submitted with these new chemical filings have found that companies are not providing all of the data that they should be, and that some of these chemicals are getting approved anyway.
Sharon, where does this go from here? I mean, we've been doing shows about this for years, and it just keeps getting worse. As we've said, this affects very vulnerable communities. This affects the environment, our water, our air. Mm-hmm. Where do you see this going? And the other thing is, just quickly, our guests say that we could hold the line on certain things, but if Trump is reelected, we're going to see massive, massive changes. I mean, you said earlier they're not getting everything they want, but if he's reelected, it could go even further.
And the court pick is very important here,
right,
too. And, you know, which is, it is very scary. And I think that because the potential for harm and increased harm is so tremendous, I think that really where we go here is widespread outrage that fuels action in one way or another. And so we talked about political action, and I think that people just need to be incredibly vocal, and the things that and about one, you know, that they demand protections, and two, recognizing that we're really in a different place from, you know, a past when we assumed that, you know, that water, safe drinking water, and, you know, and decisions made considering the best science. It's really not where we are now. And I think people need to raise their voices about it being completely unacceptable.
Well, we will continue doing shows about this. Sharon Lerner covers health and the environment for The Intercept. Check out her series, The Teflon Toxin, which was a finalist for a National Magazine Award, at yourcallradio.org. Sharon, thanks for your reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Melanie Benesch is legislative attorney at the Environmental Working Group, and they've got a wealth of information at ewg.org. Melanie, thank you for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Coming up tomorrow, we will speak with filmmaker Mimi Chakarova about her new series, Still I Rise, which celebrates people who persevere in spite of their struggles. We'll be joined by Mimi Chakarova and Dionisia Ramos, who shares the experiences of her undocumented parents in the film The Alien. Her dad crossed the border searching for work. He spent 60 years harvesting the land of others. He's now tending to his own garden. And her parents put all four of their children through college. We hope you can join us for that. Your Call is produced here at KALW in San Francisco. Listen to past shows and sign up for our podcast, yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show, and Sydney Johnson, who is our intern. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.